him in his house. Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports. Now. On the Sportsnet Radio Network.
All right.
Burn blue on the sea, loose and can bleed under skies so smoky blue-green. I can't foresee a Dixie did she, so we dance.
Thursday, the 19th of March, hour number two of Primetime Sports. Bob McCown with Ken Reed now. And this shuffling of co-hosts. Didn't you do 3 hours earlier this week, one day?
Yeah, on Tuesday.
Were you extraordinarily fatigued afterwards?
No, it's just radio.
It's just radio.
No, I'm so glad.
What does that mean? It's just
radio. I had to
do
a show. I had to do Sportsnet Central later that night, so I had to pace myself, Bob. So, to be honest, I only gave you about maybe 62% of myself that day. I know I usually give you upwards of 87%, but that day you didn't get the full throttle.
Gee, it's hard to tell.
It is, I'm sure. There's probably an analytical statistic that could measure it for us. But, I mean, you see me in person, so you have to leave it to your eyeballs to judge.
What does that mean?
I'm just saying.
Are you supposed to assess what kind of effort you're giving based on visual impact?
I would assume that you probably go home and fill out charts after each different co-host and scout co-hosts and have a rankings for them.
When's the last time I called you and said, hey, Ken, can you do the show today?
That'd be never, Bob.
That'd be never.
You called me once and said, hey, Ken, you want to golf in a couple days? I said, yes.
Yeah, that was your early days on this show. I was just trying to be nice.
You were just trying to check me out.
So, the point being that I have no influence or impact on whether you are here or not here, whether you're here for an hour, 5 minutes, 3 hours, whether you stay all night or anything else.
Come on, Bob.
I don't get involved.
No.
I don't analyze your performance afterwards, I can assure you.
You're the
I
emperor.
Have other things to think about.
You're like the emperor in Star Wars.
Yeah, well,
you let Darth Vader go out.
My clothes.
You let Darth Vader go out and do the dirty work, but you're really the one. You're the master of puppets, Bob. We all know that. You know you're putting whoever your Darth Vader is, you're the overlord of him.
You'll be happy we're talking lots of hockey today.
It's excellent. Right in my wheelhouse as opposed to March Madness where
well, I asked Kenny during the break there about March Madness, and I don't know what I said, but you confessed you know nothing about it.
Not a thing, and I think probably 97% of the people out there know nothing about it either, but probably 93% of them pretend they do. So this is the time of year where everyone pretends to know about college basketball. It's fine to enjoy it. Everybody loves the buzzer beaters. The Georgia State thing earlier today was great, but I'm not saying I know anything about it. It's kind of like if I go watch, let's say, Whitesnake, and they play Still of the Night. I'm pumped for it, but I don't know the chords and stuff. I couldn't analyze it.
Oh, Whitesnake is a band.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So I can be entertained by it, but I'm not going to pretend to know, well, anything about it, really.
Well, no, I think the truth of the matter is that the vast majority of us, even if we are in this business, are compelled to watch things that we deal with on a regular basis in college basketball. In this country, at least, is not one of them.
That is correct.
So it's not like I don't watch college basketball games. I'll watch the odd college basketball game.
I haven't watched one all year.
But it doesn't prohibit you from being involved in the pools.
That's true. Although
like we have a couple of tournament brackets wandering around here, and I actually filled one out and left it at home the last 2 days, and so I'm out. I forgot to bring it in.
I think people
here... Which
is
probably just as well, because I didn't have either of the two 13s that won earlier today.
I think people... don't say that, because I think people here trust you enough and know you're a man set of honor that if you brought your bracket in tomorrow, they would believe that you did fill it out before the tournament began.
No, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't
do that.
You
shouldn't have said that about the 13s.
Well, I won 3 out of 4 years.
Really? And then you just dropped the mic and I'm out.
Well, no, I did drop the mic and I got out because people thought I was... cheating or something.
Yeah. Well, the good thing about
I wasn't, by the way.
No, of course you weren't. The good thing about filling out a bracket is it's one and done. Like, you just fill it out and then you leave it. The problem I have with hockey pools now, and I'm in one, is you have to do it every day. And 68% of the time, I just forget to do my lineup because I've discovered there are more important things than fantasy hockey. you know.
You mustn't be doing very well.
Like reheating ravioli and things like that.
You mustn't be doing very well on your fantasy hockey.
Oh, I'm doing horrible. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that explains it.
Yeah, exactly. And I can't figure out the set button to just set to players that are set lineup to those who are playing. It's too advanced for me. But I hope people
enjoy. There's a button and you can't figure out how to push it?
Exactly. I hope people enjoy March Madness, and I hope they get a kick out of it. But one of my peeves is everybody just going around pretending they know everything about Butler or Georgia State. Because chances are you don't.
Well, no. I mean, I did my bracket in probably, I don't know, 5 minutes.
Right. See, I can less than that.
Some years I take nines over eights. I just decide this year I'm going to take all nines over eights.
Mm-hmm.
And this year I took a lot of chalks.
Chalks?
No, I took the higher seed.
See,
lower
I
seed.
I didn't even know what a chalk is, and I'm not going to
pretend. Chalk is a favorite.
Is that a Vegas term?
Yeah.
See, I'm not much of a sports gambler.
Yeah, the chalk. Like if you had a four seed against a, what would it be, 13 seed? Fours play 13s? Threes play 15s? No, fours play 13s.
Why is it called a chalk?
Just a favorite. It's just another term for favorite.
Okay.
I don't know why I use that term. It's just...
No, I'm saying where did the term come from?
That's a good question. I don't know historically what the genealogy of the term chalk is.
Okay. If anyone knows, don't let me know.
Butler, by the way, looks like they're going to get past Texas.
Yeah, I figured they would. I figured Butler had a good all-around
team. You had no clue.
They'd be able to penetrate Texas under the hoop. In fact, I figured Butler would move on.
There's three seconds left when I said it. Looks like they're going to win.
I picked
Butler
by eight.
Well,
what'd they win by?
Eight.
Yeah, there you go.
And I can tell you this much. In my bracket, I had Texas.
Really? See, I didn't see the 11 beating the 6 in the Midwest.
Well, and it's stupid little things. I turned on the television one day, and Texas is playing, and the announcers, and I didn't know anything about Texas, and the announcer said, you know, Texas was, I think, ranked in the top 10 early in the year. And I can't remember what happened to them, but I thought, well, maybe they'll rediscover the magic, and clearly they did not.
Right. That's the other thing about ranking sports teams. I always kind of laugh at that. Because won't the games ultimately decide the rankings?
Well.
Just a thought. Just going there.
We had a conversation with Richard Deitch earlier. And I came up with what I think is might be an interesting scenario. Of course, Kentucky has a chance to become the first undefeated team to win the NCAA tournament since Indiana back in the 70s.
You know what I know about Kentucky? They're 34-0.
Yeah. And they got a bunch of freshmen, which is what most schools like Kentucky, Louisville, North Carolina, Duke, the big schools generally lose their kids. It's one and done, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kansas is another one. And I don't pretend to know how many freshmen are playing for the University of Kentucky.
I think
but
four.
I suspect, well, there you go. How are freshmen likely to react in the pressure of an NCAA championship game if, in fact, they go up against a school that has more juniors and seniors? So now you got a bunch of snot-nosed 18-year-olds against more mature 21- and 22-year-olds.
I was going to say, aren't you a snot-nosed 20-year-old as a junior?
Well, not compared to an 18-year-old. I just think that there's a real chance Kentucky doesn't go undefeated. Now, I picked them in my bracket that isn't going to be registered. Because I like you, I don't know enough about it to figure out what other team can beat them. So I thought, what the hell, I'll just go with Kentucky. But it does occur to me that it's much more difficult for a big school that gets highly recruited kids out of high school who are only going to play 1 year in college and then go to the NBA draft. Got to be tough for them to win in pressure situations. Got to be tougher.
I think that would ultimately that would depend on the kids and on the group. I've met a lot of 18-year-olds who are more mature than I am.
Nah,
at my age.
Well, that might be true, but that's a bad comparison. You know, and I went back to UNLV as the last team to go undefeated, I think, into the Final Four. Although Richard Deitch suggested Wichita State, but I don't think they went to the Final Four.
So for you, is the pressure of being undefeated more than the pressure of winning a national championship?
No, not necessarily. excuse me, it's just the focus for the discussion. And I'm just wondering whether that UNLV team, I remember, obviously, and they had no freshmen starting for them. I don't know if they had freshmen on the team.
You mentioned all the JUCO transfers that used to go to UNLV.
Yeah, well, that was the Larry Johnson team.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a JUCO transfer. I think that was his senior year. I believe he was with the team the year before when they won the national championship. And I think that was his senior year, but I'm not 100% sure of that. In any event, doesn't matter. I just don't remember them having any freshmen on the floor.
Okay.
That, you know, that mattered. And I just wonder whether that might be the difference for this Kentucky team. That if they run into a team that has a bunch of, you know, it's got to be a good team.
Mm-hmm.
But if they have a bunch of juniors and seniors, whether that experience level, age difference, maturity, physical prowess can make a difference.
I would argue no.
We shall see.
Not at that level and not at that tier of player that is obviously good enough to start at Kentucky for a freshman. Not that I want to get into a scrap.
Our next guest wrote a story for the Toronto Star outlining how the National Hockey League and its teams have lied about concussions and the head injury risks about playing the game. Steve Payne, of course, is a former NHL forward, and he joins us on the phone. Hello, Steve.
Hello. How are you doing?
Good of you to join us. Thanks very much.
Yeah, no problem.
What's your general take on the National Hockey League's, how seriously the NHL views concussions?
Well, you're talking about today, or you're talking in the past?
In the past, well, we understand it wasn't even discussed.
Correct, yep. And, you know, I think you can see that as time has progressed, as we've gotten closer to today, certainly within the last 10 years, I think because there's been more, open dialogue, not just in the NHL, but in other sports about concussions and the impact to athletes in general, that there's more public awareness, and so they basically had to start paying more attention to it and couldn't just look the other way. This is just my take, but I think you can see the way they've reacted to it. You know, in today's game, you'll have a league star like a Sidney Crosby, who's paid many millions of dollars to perform, but yet they'll take him out of the game and have him out of the game for, you know, half a season or something like that, and do what is necessary and what's right to help him with those concussion issues, because he's had a number of them. Whereas, you know, back in my days, back in the 80s, well, star players, if they got their bell rung, they're right back in the game again. They wouldn't keep them out.
You played 10 seasons in the NHL. How many concussions do you believe you suffered?
You know, I don't know for sure. And I'll share something with you. And up until I was getting tested, I've been tested a few times now in the last 18 months, and I was always under the impression that a concussion only counted if you were knocked out cold. And I have come to be educated on the fact that that's not true. Being knocked silly, at least where you've lost your faculties and you need smelling salts or assistance to get your faculties back and get your senses back and everything, is a concussion. So I always thought, well, I never had any real concussions, but it turns out I probably had at least a half a dozen, probably more like 10 or 12, I suppose.
This is a tough question to answer. You're in your mid-50s now. Is that accurate?
I'm 56.
Right, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
This week we saw a football player, a young man, in his early 20s, third-round draft choice, significant talent for the San Francisco 49ers, quit the game of football, and in essence because of fear or recognition, less about fear, because I've seen him interviewed, and I don't think he's a guy who's afraid of too much, but concern about what he felt was almost an inevitability, and that was that he was going to be concussed repeatedly during his NFL career, and that it would impact on his existence, his long-term life, and maybe even cause his premature death, and decided after 1 year in the National Football League, where he made, I think, about $1 million, including his signing bonus, to go back to school, continue his education, and continue his life in another profession. If you knew then what you know now, would you have played professional hockey?
That's a good question. It's hard to put myself back in that position, you know, over 30 years ago. And what would I do? Well, you know, as in your early 20s, you tend to think you're 10-foot tall and bulletproof, and, you know, you're impervious to anything that could happen to you. I will tell you this. I mean, I can't give you a conclusive answer on that. What would I do if at 20 years old? I would probably play. But I will tell you this. If I understood the ramifications of concussions and understood that when I got my bell rung, that was actually a concussion, just because I wasn't taken off in a stretcher, it was a concussion, I would certainly not have, you know, been eager to get back into the game as soon as I could actually see straight. I probably would have wanted to know a little bit more about that. And certainly if I knew that the long-term effects from it, and that's really what it comes down to. You know, I blew my knee up. I had 5 surgeries on my right knee, and I've had surgery on my spine, all that stuff while I played in the NHL. And that's fine and dandy. Those are physical injuries, stuff I knew would happen. I did it. I'm fine with it. I recovered from them. I came back from them. But that's a joint. It's a knee or it's a spine. Sure. And certainly that can cripple you and stuff like that and inhibit you from maybe having a regular life. But there's nothing more important in your body than your brain. I mean, without a properly functioning brain, the rest of it suffers as well. And that certainly would have been a much more dire decision for me to have to face and look at. And I don't know what I actually would have done, but I sure as hell wouldn't have gone back out the next shift.
Steve, we all seem to be learning more about concussions almost by the day, it seems. What do you think the National Hockey League knew about concussions when you were playing?
Can't say that for sure. I don't know what they knew, but common sense tells me that, you know, at least in my era, well, I played 78 to 88, and, you know, we weren't at the turn of the century, and we weren't dealing with witch doctors then. They certainly understood neurology to a pretty good level, I would think. Certainly enough to understand as experts that repeated, you know, injury to the brain is definitely not a good thing, you know, and can eventually be very detrimental as you get older. They certainly know more now. Obviously, we're always going to continue to know more now, but they sure as hell weren't in the dark back then. And they knew damn well that getting your bell rung repeatedly is not the right thing for a player to have to go through.
Do you have any examples where you would see other teammates go through the same thing, and maybe now you recognize that they had post-concussion syndrome and they were playing with it, whether they were woozy or memory loss or whatever?
Absolutely. Yep. There's probably, without naming names, probably a half a dozen guys that I played with that suffered multiple, and I'm talking knocked out cold concussions, couldn't come back to the game. They were knocked that silly. Mm-hmm. But they'd be back playing within a game or two. And then they'd get knocked out again. And I noticed that, you know, the one thing that we did know, that we started to notice, was that if you got knocked out enough times, you became more susceptible being knocked out. It seemed like these guys could get hit far less and would knock their lights out again. And, you know, I see these guys after we retired, and some of them are, it's, you know, you can see the very slow speaking. They certainly aren't on the ball like they used to be. You know, I feel bad for them, you know, and I can tell that they're suffering from that stuff. If I can, I'll share a real quick story. I'm not going to use the person's name, but there is a guy I played with that eventually had to retire from concussion. Only a couple of years after he retired, I would get phone calls from his wife asking if I'd seen him. And I'd say, you know, what are you talking about? I played golf with him yesterday. I haven't seen him since. She goes, well, I haven't seen him since yesterday either. And what happened was he went through a couple of years, I think he got treatment and so on, where he would black out and he would just disappear for days and not know where he went and then come home.
Wow.
Now that's scary. That's scary stuff. And this is a guy that I've known since I was 22 years old and a good friend.
Is that why you write, Steve, and I'm just going to quote from your article, is that why you write, beyond fear for my own future, I felt a sense of duty to join this litigation?
That's absolutely true. Yep. Yeah, I mean, we're teammates, you know, for life. And when I see this happening to these guys, they're far better, worse off than I am. I've discovered through my testing that I have got some short-term memory issues now that I should not have at my age, and the doctors are attributing that to the concussion issue, which, you know, I had no idea until I got educated on it over the last 18 months. And, you know, so I'm dealing with my own issues, but not nearly like some of the other guys, and they're the ones that I really feel for, and those are the ones that I want the NHL to step up and at least be ready to take care of them if and when that happens to them, where they aren't functional anymore and they can't support themselves and support their families. That's where the rub is.
Has your quality of life? I mean, you've told us what you're experiencing to some extent, but has your quality of life, in your opinion, been affected by the concussions you suffered?
A little bit. The short-term memory thing. I'm forgetting things that I shouldn't normally be forgetting now. And it just adds to frustration and things like that. And what I've also learned too is that this concussion conditions, these neurological conditions, can cause unwarranted anger and emotion and things like that. I'm kind of an emotional guy anyway, so I never really thought about that, never considered it. But I will tell you, I alluded in my article that it almost cost me a marriage. Mm-hmm. And that's a fact. My wife walked out on me. She couldn't take my anger anymore, and I didn't know why I was angry all the time. I just was. And, eventually we patched things up and we're fine, and I tried to learn to control it now. And she's learned to understand that it's really not always me, but the condition.
Are you talking about anger that would set you off, or just kind of permanent scowl type living?
Just little thing. Any little thing set me off. Mm-hmm. I mean, just stuff that should not get somebody upset. And I would get upset, and I would hold that anger for hours. And, not being the person on the other side in the room with that bear with a boil, mm-hmm. I could only imagine, my wife and concerned and wondering, why in the hell am I so mad? And what has she done to cause that, And it wasn't her. It wasn't really anything. What I've learned here is part of it's been this concussion thing, which I had a hard time getting my head around and understanding that it could have that big of an effect on you, but I've learned now that it does.
So there are multiple issues here. The one I'm most intrigued with is, as somebody who is obviously astute, interested, accepts the situation that you've gone through, or understands, not accepts, but understands what you've gone through, what do you do to change the game to at least mitigate dramatically the number of concussions that occur in the sport?
Boy, that's a great question, and one that's been asked many times and one that they're trying to figure out. I suppose, one of the things that I think personally anyway, and I've read some stuff in the papers now from some of the other guys that I used to play against, most notably, it was very interesting. I think this was about 2 years ago, Cam Neely, the great Boston Bruin. I played against Cam. He's a Hall of Famer, and he's now part of the Bruins organization. He mentioned something in an article that I went, bingo, this is exactly what I've been saying to my friends and everything else. The fact that the players have got all this high-tech, new-age kind of equipment that they wear. And the way I watch them play now, it seems like they don't have respect for injury to the other person or the injury to themselves, because they've got this stuff on, and they think, they're impervious to being hurt. And they're running at each other at incredible speeds, and they're all big. I mean, much bigger than the average player when I played. And I can only imagine, the impacts now. And even though you got all that padding on and stuff like that, what they're forgetting is that your brain's still floating around in your skull. And it doesn't matter that you bang shoulder to shoulder. That impact can still have an effect on your head. And this is stuff that I'm learning from the experts. And I think that if they had equipment was more like the crappy stuff we wore, mm-hmm. It was
yeah.
paper thin and everything like that, that they'd have a little bit more respect for what might happen to themselves as well as their opponent from running into each other with such abandon. Because, if you think back, I'm sure you guys watched the game back when I played, you could still play without a helmet. You had to sign a waiver, of course, absolving
right.
the NHL of any ramifications if you broke your head open. But yet guys still played without the helmets, and not too many of them did get their heads broke open. Mm-hmm. Why? Because all of us were cognizant of the fact that they didn't have a helmet on, and we were very careful to not hit them in the head. I'm not saying if we saw them with a helmet on, it's like the helmet had hit them over the head. But you know what I'm getting at.
No,
I
do.
You're just more mindful that, I could really hurt this guy bad. I don't want to put myself or him in that position.
And, Steve, if you're going to launch yourself at a guy, I'm sure in your era, and know we were talking about soft pads and foam pads for elbow pads and shoulder pads yesterday, it should hurt to hit as well. Like if you're going to really
Correct.
Take a guy out, right? That should hurt you a little bit as well.
That's what I'm getting at. Yeah, I mean, that's the impact and damage both of you.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the giver, but the or the receiver, but the giver can get hurt just as bad.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we were very mindful of that. I mean, we still had our injuries and so on because it's going to happen. It's a physical sport. But I don't know. I'd be interested in seeing statistics on injuries today versus injuries when I played or even injuries in the era before myself and see and compare those right now. But that's why I think they're getting more concussions. I think just because of that equipment, and they're much larger, and those impacts are much more brutal, you know, than my day. And I think they just don't have the respect. So.
I'm just thinking, how many years has it been since that coach's corner where Don Cherry took that elbow pad and cranked it on the table and hit Ron McLean over the head with it, and it hurt then, and they're still using those things now? I mean, I could go on about padding all day long, but I'm just wondering, Steve, when I read your article, has all this that you've gone through, has it taken away your love and of the game and the joy that you should probably have from it, having played 613 games in the NHL?
No, it hasn't. I mean, I'm very thankful for the career I had, believe me. You know, I was lucky, one of the lucky guys that got to make it and got to live the dream and so on. And it's just unfortunate that, you know, we have things like this going on now. Like I said, up until a few years ago, I was impervious to it. I had no idea there was issues or problems that could happen. Like I said, I didn't even think that I'd ever had a concussion, because I thought being knocked out was the only way you had a concussion.
Right.
And, you know, so I'm in the dark up until a couple of years ago. I don't know how you stop it. I mean, other than making it no contact. And then if you do that, who wants to watch, I suppose, right? I think they could certainly take, you know, the fighting part of it out of the game. There's no doubt punching a guy in the head is going to not be good for that guy's head. You know, brain.
That's pretty obvious, yeah.
Yeah, pretty obvious. So that's one thing that could be done. They could take that out and not ruin the game of hockey. And I know there's all kinds of debates and arguments about that, but the tough guys are, you know, think that that's not the way to go. Well, you know, it's probably going to cost them a job. Well, you know, decisions are tough sometimes, and that's the way it goes. You got to look at the bigger picture. And, you know, so that's one area where they certainly could reduce the concussion issues right there. That's an obvious one. And that doesn't stop us from playing good, hard hockey, that kind of thing. Geez, they got two refs on the ice now. My God, they only had one ref when I played. So
yeah, you'd think they'd see more. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You shouldn't have to go and police yourself, because the ref should see stuff and should stop stuff before it even starts, that kind of thing, and so on. But as far as the hitting and everything, I know that they call penalties much more quickly now than they used to. The clutching, grabbing kind of stuff, some high sticking kinds of things. They're very keen on calling penalties and stuff. It still happens though. So I don't know what the magic bullet is here for those guys. I really don't. It's just that at least they're paying to it now. When guys do get concussions, they are giving them the proper treatment and the proper time to before they allow them to come back to the ice. So.
Steve, well done with the article. Good of you to join us today. Thank you very much, and we wish you the best.
Well, thank you. I appreciate this opportunity to voice my concern and hopefully educate others that are, you know, students of the game and fans of the game and so on. We'll see where it takes us. Hopefully it'll come out with we'll have a good outcome, and the guys that need the help will get the help when they need it.
Former NHL forward Steve Payne. When we come back, Doug McLean of the NHL on Sportsnet joins us, and Primetime continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
It's the only time you have control of Bob McCowan.
Let's go!
Subscribe to Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Hoops, tonight at 7. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
So I wrongly assumed that every Sportsnet hockey guy was in Florida this week for the managing generals meetings.
One guy flies the other way. When they fly to Florida, the other guy goes the other way.
Yeah. Well, he's our guest. Here's Doug McLean.
You know what? I was just sitting here relaxing this afternoon reading my hockey card book. It's just one of the greatest books.
Jeez, how many times have you read that book now,
well,
Doug?
I have two books. I read The 100 Things That Bob McCowan Hates in Sports and then your book. Yeah. You know, they're two of the best books of all time.
Amazing how it's right in front of you and you can't get the title right.
You must be in the book. That's the only reason I can think that you'd want to read it.
I had a hockey card when I was coaching the Panthers, except I had the chief of police standing next to me in it.
Were you handcuffed in it?
Why would they put a cop with me? Seriously.
Well,
it ruined my first chance to get a hockey card. It was one of those, you know, police promotion things.
Yeah.
It pissed me off. Anyway.
So here's the thing that pissed you off even more was when the woman came up to you and said, "Will you sign your hockey card?" And then she looked at you and said, "Oh, I thought you were the other guy."
Exactly. Anyway, that's okay.
Is there anything you want to talk about today? Because I'm bored, really, to tell you the truth.
You know what? Did Shanny get bored of the Kadri suspension, or has he left it at 4 games?
I haven't talked to him. Don't know.
No. Okay.
He's in Florida, unlike you. You'll be going, what, tomorrow?
Tomorrow morning, 8:20.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's my dream.
Yeah. No, there's not much going on. It's pretty quiet. I mean, I'm doing the Montreal-Carolina game, and I'm just saying, sitting here down to Corey Hirsch, saying, I don't think I've watched Carolina play once this year.
Why would you?
Well, they're just a team. You have a hard time getting excited about watching, but I'm doing the Montreal-Carolina game. But interesting with Montreal, they've given up on average the eighth most shots against of any team. They're almost, I can't say they're playing like the Leafs did the last 4 years with shots against, but man, for a team that's so high in the standings, they give up a ton of shots and a ton of chances, and Carey Price has been that good.
Does he bail them out, Doug, or is that part of the whole thing? Hey, we got Price back there, so let's not, worry about it too much.
I mean, they keep talking about Therrien's defensive system, and I'd say right now it's a little bit flawed. I mean, Pacioretty, has scored some amazingly timely goals. He's one of the best left wingers in the game right now, other than, of course, Rick Nash in New York. They're a funny team. I mean, they've been consistent. I mean, 95 points. They've been consistent month to month from a winning perspective, but there seems to be still some concern, with the way they play an overall defensive game and what's going to happen at playoff time. But Price is, he's going to give them a chance in every series, no doubt about it.
What about what's going on in Ottawa?
And before you go to Ottawa, if Carey Price isn't the Montreal Canadiens goaltender, do they make the playoffs?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'd say there's a very good chance that they wouldn't. And Bob, that speaks to how tight it is, too. I mean, how tight some of these races are. If you slip a touch, you could be out. Granted, they have 95 points. Yeah, I would say if Price doesn't have an MVP season, they're fighting for their playoff lives.
My point is, I don't think they're that good. I mean, I got nothing against the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah.
I watch them quite regularly on television. My wife is a big fan. But I'm just
Does
not.
She watch Carolina too, because maybe I could give her a call. And get...
Not on a bet. She wouldn't watch any hockey game unless the Montreal Canadiens are playing.
Oh, okay. I don't know that you're not on target there. I mean, he's been that good, and Pacioretty's been that good. Galchenyuk's a great story. Gallagher's a great story, and then you're saying Subban is always a great story, and you love watching him play. Then after that, it's, Markov's pretty good, but he's getting up there, and you're saying, whoa. I mean, Price really does stand on his head. And they give up the most shots of any team in the league that's other than the non-playoff teams.
Yeah.
Well, you can't say they're not a good team, though, if they have 95 points.
No, that's what I mean. But Price makes them a good team.
Right, but so like Jim Houston was saying yesterday, Bob, Price is part of that team, so.
Exactly. He is, and that's why when you're going into the first round, you're saying, I'm probably going to pick Montreal as a favorite with whoever they play,
Unless Price gets hurt.
Well, we saw that a couple of years ago, right?
Yeah, last year.
Last year. Oh, yeah. Last year. And that was the end of that.
Yeah, although Tokarski goes in Florida the other night and he makes 44 saves.
Yes.
Yeah, that can happen. Yeah. But you know what? Yeah. If he was as good as Price, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You wanted to talk about Ottawa a bit.
I do, because I don't think we're... I don't think we're talking about them
because they were off the radar.
Well, this might be the biggest game on the NHL calendar so far this year. Would you not argue that, Doug?
It's funny. Dave Cameron takes over as coach, and after like 20 games, he's got the identical record as Paul MacLean. Mm-hmm. Then the Hamburglar shows up, and it's been an amazing story. But with the Hamburglar standing on his head and playing real well, the team has actually started to play the way that Paul MacLean and Dave Cameron and Brian Murray has been trying to coax and coerce and scream at them to play for a couple of years. And that's some good, sound defensive game and some timely goals. So they're playing pretty well. You know, I watched Turris with an unbelievable play in the winning goal. Carlson. You watch Carlson almost on every shift, what he's doing for them. They've become, and Stone and Hoffman and Zibanejad's becoming a good player. They've been better since, they've just been a better team since the Hamburglars come in there. And Eugene stepped up tonight. He's Eugene Melnick, your great friend. He stepped up and he bought masks for the Hamburglar masks for the first 10,000 fans tonight.
I hear.
Or maybe McDonald's, I'm not saying that word. Maybe somebody donated them. I don't know. But it's great. It's great for the fans. There's unbelievable excitement in Ottawa. And they're right there. They're 4 points back. They're five, really, because of the tiebreaker. And, so they win tonight. They're back in the mix with a game in hand. If they lose tonight, they're probably over.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's do or die tonight.
Yeah.
Only thing I can't believe about this whole story is that Cameron needed the priest to tell him to start Hammond. I mean... I hope Dave knew what he was going to start Hammond before the priest told him.
Geez, I'm lucky I wasn't coaching because it'd have to be a minister, an Anglican minister, tell me, and that's scary.
Well, and the fact you haven't been to church since 1983, that wouldn't have worked out for you either.
As I told my mother, every time I go to church, I have to meet a new minister. And she said, well, Doug, we change them only every 3 years. Anyway. So, a lot of snow in PEI.
Oh, thank you very much for the update. How would you know? You're going to Florida. Anyway.
Yeah. So, lots of fun. Lots of excitement around.
We spent some time here talking about the managing general's meeting in Florida and the fact that, you know, what they're talking about and what they aren't talking about. And my conjecture has been that they're not talking about the quality of entertainment in the game today. And including... goal scoring, which everybody likes. Unfortunately, the hockey people don't like it. They want to mitigate it as much as they can.
Well, and I think you know why goal scoring is down. I don't think it's really that complicated. It's certainly, I watched the Rangers game last night, it was in Chicago. It was a great hockey game and it was 1-1 and then you watch, or 1-0. And then you watch, I did Anaheim, L.A., and it was a great game, and it was 3-2. But there's only one reason for lack of scoring. One reason only. And that's goaltending has become so damn good, it's ruining our game. They're that good. They're so damn big, and they're so good. Just consider the Hamburglar. What he's done. You look at the goalie last night for Chicago. He's Scott Darling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a minor leaguer. He's 6'6", 232. I mean, they're so big. They're so talented. They're technically sound. There's great coaching going on. That's the only reason scoring's down. I don't care what anybody says.
But
if they want to shrink them,
yes.
I mean, they did a BS shrink job a few years ago.
Yeah, not much.
But how do you shrink them when you've got 6'6" goaltenders and you've got to protect them? You know, they're so big, they need the big equipment to protect them.
Nonsense.
Is it cheat pad on their glove protection? Is a 6'2", 170-pound Ryan Miller wearing pants that would fit Andre the Giant? Is that protection?
Well, if you get Weber shooting at 108 miles an hour at you, you may say, I'm going to wear a little bigger pair of pants with a little extra padding.
I'd wear a little bigger pants, but your pants have to stick out 6 inches on either side of you?
Hey, don't shoot me. I just told you what the problem is. Why are you mad at me?
Doug, I'm always mad at you.
I just said it was it's goaltending that's causing scoring to man. What else is it?
I agree with you, Doug.
There's a ton of scoring chances every night. Teams are giving up a ton of chances. We just talked about Carey Price, and he's the best of the best. But I'll tell you, what team in the league has bad goaltending? Other than maybe a couple of teams. And then you say, well,
Edmonton.
Really, they're not bad. Yeah, Edmonton has struggled. There's no doubt about it. But really, there's not many teams that you go, look, like Columbus go into Vancouver tonight. You know, Bobrovsky could win that game for Columbus. Mm-hmm. It's that goofy, you know?
I don't know.
Big.
I don't know. I mean, we're talking about this kid in Ottawa. He's 27 years old. Is that right?
Yeah.
You know, he didn't just fall out of the cradle here and become a great goaltender.
Oh, because you know what? When they signed him at a Bowling Green, the Ottawa staff were excited. He was an unrestricted free agent coming out of Bowling Green. They loved him. They loved him. There was competition to get him. And they thought it was a great signing when they acquired the Hamburglar. And all of a sudden, he goes to the minors. He's okay. The next year, he was pretty good. Then next year, he's got a bad team in front of him, and he wasn't very good this year. But he gets a chance, and hey, he's what they thought he was coming out of Bowling Green. Now, not quite this good. I mean, he's broken records from the 1920s here, hasn't he, with his start?
Well, 11-0-1,
yeah,
I think.
Frank Remsick record from 38-39. Yeah, it's crazy.
Seriously, he didn't have, what was his name, Frank who?
Remsick.
He didn't have big equipment, Frank.
No, he didn't.
And
he didn't play the butterfly either.
He was probably 5'4", you know. Yeah.
And, Frank Remsick made 14 saves tonight.
Like, Darren Pang was 5'5" when he played goal. Now, you could get goals on Darren, you know. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Well, he wasn't that good either.
Well, Bob, you like to point out that Ken Dryden was a big man. You know, there was
Ken Dryden is still a big man. I mean, he's 6'4".
Right, look at the equipment he wore.
Well, I know. And
well, put them in it now. Put them in that now.
Look, here's the thing.
Well, can't protect them.
Wait a second. Here's the date. Why are guys able to shoot the puck harder than everybody except Bobby Hull, Frank Mahovlich, and Dennis Hull, and guys like that today?
Because they're unbelievably well-conditioned, and because
part
they have graphite, and they have graphite sticks.
Correct.
Sticks.
So
well,
now.
You've got the graphite sticks to help scoring. That's what you want. You want more scoring, so they give them graphite sticks, and now they shoot the puck a ton. They just break the glass with
well,
it.
Well, no, wait, yeah, but wait a second. You know, this is the big circle that hockey people love to get in. You know, you're going to defend the sticks because you want them to shoot harder because you want more goals scored, but you got big goaltenders because they let them wear these big pads, but you got to wear the big pads. Why do you have to wear the big pads? Well, because they got the sticks that can shoot it so hard.
Look what you've done, Doug.
Yeah, it's a mess.
But you know what? Gary Bettman said last week the game's never been better.
Well, that's what he says every year.
I've never disagreed with Gary in my life.
Not publicly, you haven't. It's the fundamental difference between you and I. Well, there's a lot of differences between you and I, but that's one of them.
As they say at Rogers when the league phones and complains about me, he was just joking.
He was just kidding.
You have the master poker face, Doug. I never know. Yeah. You could be reading my book right now for all I know, but probably not.
You don't read your book. You look at the pictures, by the way.
That's why I put them in there, so you could get a copy of it.
Okay. Well, the problem is there's too much writing and not enough pictures in his book.
Anyway,
we got to go.
Why am I on today? Kiprios is not available or what?
Too late to ask that question because you're off now.
See you later.
See you, buddy.
Thanks. Goodbye.
Go back to my book.
Doug McLean of the NHL and Sportsnet. It's the same round and round we go with hockey people. They got an answer for everything.
Well, everybody has an answer for everything, Doug. Or Bob. See, Doug's in my head now.
Good. We haven't solved anything. We're going to try one more time. Kay Whitmore, the NHL's goaltender supervisor, will join us. He's been trying to get the size of goaltenders reduced.
Mm-hmm.
I think you need a height and weight limit.
Height and weight limit.
Remember that basketball? They had a basketball league. You had no more than 6'6", you couldn't be.
Yeah, the Halifax Windjammers played it, I think.
Kay Whitmore and somebody else coming up next hour. I don't know. On Primetime.